Major Horridge, Reel 2. I believe there was a case of smallpox in your unit while you were in Alexandria.
Yeah, there was. It happened to be in my platoon. One of my lance corporals, whose brother was a herbalist, refused to be vaccinated on grounds which I honestly don't really know why, but as a herbalist he refused on grounds that he wouldn't be vaccinated. And it so happened that he was the only member of the battalion to catch smallpox. We were in Alexandria, and he was in a tent, sleeping in a tent with other people of the platoon, and he was taken ill, and he was there for 2 days before they realised what was the matter with him. And then he was taken to hospital, and yet nobody in the tent caught it. Of course, everybody else had been vaccinated. Nobody else caught it. The poor chap eventually recovered, was sent out to Gallipoli, rejoined my platoon. I was very sad to say he was killed the following day.
What kit had you been issued with before going to Egypt? Were you in khaki drill, lightweight uniform, or were you still...
No, I don't think we were. I think we were in an ordinary khaki uniform. We had Sam Brown belts and swords. And we had these other uniforms. I don't think we had the mess uniform. I think we just had a blue uniform and the khaki uniform, as far as I can remember.
This sword, did you actually use it, or were you trained in how to use it? Or was it purely
ceremonial? No, but you had to carry it on certain ceremonial... yes, for instance, in the march past, when we marched past in Hamilton, we had our swords, and we had to carry them in the correct way as the march passed, and we had to salute with the swords. Yes.
Did you have any special equipment to avoid sunstroke?
Yes, we had things, I've forgotten what they were called. They were red things down the back of your khaki coat.
Spine pads.
Pardon?
Spine pads.
Yes, that's right, spine pads, that's it.
Were they effective?
I think so, yes. I think that possibly one or two occasionally got a touch of the sun. I think I had it on one occasion, but it wasn't anything very bad.
What about pith helmets? Did you have those?
Oh, yes, we all had to wear pith helmets.
When you were detailed to go to Gallipoli, were there any special preparations made before you left?
Well, to tell you the truth, you have to realise, Mr. Hart, that I was a second lieutenant, and what the higher command and the captains and the colonels and the generals were doing, I don't really know. So all I know was that we received our orders from our company commander, and that's what we did.
Can you remember what these orders were?
No, I can't remember. Not that far back as that.
Well, you were put on a boat, were you, to sail out? Can you remember?
Oh, yes, we went on a boat to Gallipoli, but I can't recall the name of the boat now.
Were you the whole battalion on the one ship, or were you split
No,
up?
It's all our battalion were on one ship. I can't remember whether the brigade headquarters were on it or not.
And you sailed to Mudros?
We sailed to Mudros, yes. And as we left Mudros, there were a lot of course, a tremendous big harbour, but a lot of battleships and a lot of transport ships in the harbour. And, of course, some of the transport ships had wounded people that had already come off the peninsula. I remember, as we were leaving Mudros Harbour, somebody shouted, "Are we downhearted?" Which, of course, everybody yelled out, "No." A voice is from the other ship saying, "No, we are bloody soon will be." So that was our exit from Mudros until we landed actually at W Beach, after it was known as Lancashire Landing, on Gallipoli.
Wait, you didn't go ashore at Mudros at all?
Not that I remember.
Were you in the same boat when you left Mudros?
No, I don't think so. I can't be sure. Honestly, I don't know.
How did you get ashore at Gallipoli?
Well, we were transferred from the liner, or whatever you call it, this big ship, to a small lighter craft. It was very cold. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And it took some time, for some reason which I don't know, for some time on these little ships, these little landing boats, till we got ashore. And when we got ashore, we were marched inland up, I suppose, what would be up W Beach. And there was some sort of funk holes or something like that, shallow sort of holes. And we stayed there the night.
Could you see anything on landing?
Dark. Nothing.
Could you
hear? Nothing more than you can see on a dark night, you know.
Could you hear any sounds of fighting up on the beach?
You could hear the Turks fire nearly every night. There was much more firing by night by the Turks in Gallipoli than there was by the Germans in France at night.
Can you remember the date you landed on Gallipoli?
Yes, 5th of May, 1915.
When you first got to the Gallipoli, did you have any impression? Was it as you thought it would be? How did the place strike you, or first impression?
Well, of course, we'd been told before we got there, we'd heard rumours of what was happening, that they were attacking a hill and had got part way up the hill. They couldn't make much progress. And this, of course, turned out to be Atsi Barber. His present name is Alsi Tipi. And this is what we've been told. And nobody had rumours and things like that. But, see, we didn't really know anything about when we landed. We didn't know really how far they got inland, except that they got a certain way inland. We didn't know.
When you first heard the firing, how did it affect you?
Well, the firing wouldn't be very loud, you know. They were, by that time they were a mile or so inland. And I don't remember hearing a lot of rifle fire, but there was. And I do remember one thing. I better not say it now, because it happened later on. I'll leave it to later.
After that first night, which you spent in shallow holes in
the air,
where were you sent to then?
We were sent to near to a place called Pink Farm. And on that day, I was detailed to go to brigade headquarters as liaison officer. And it was on the 6th of May. And during the daytime, the 6th Lancashire Fusiliers had made an attack on the extreme left of the peninsula, that is to say between Gully Ravine and the sea, and had taken a Turkish trench. And our battalion were in support, and I personally was at brigade headquarters. Now, that night, Brigadier General Frith, who commanded our brigade, decided to make a tour of the front line, and the liaison officers accompanied him. I accompanied him too, and it was dark. Of course, we were led by people, and I got my first slight shock of war, seeing a few bodies lying about here and there. And we went round the line, and the brigadier did whatever he intended to do. And then we went back to brigade headquarters. And as it turned out, the next day I had to go over the same ground again in the daylight under fire.
What was your reaction when you saw your first bodies?
Well, this is it, isn't it? Of course, we knew people got killed in war, you know.
Did it frighten you at all?
No, I don't think it frightened us. There's a sort of feeling of excitement, and there must be a certain amount of fear. You don't know what's going to happen. You've no idea what's going to happen at that stage, you know.
What could you see in this front-line trench when you went round with the general?
It was dark, couldn't see anything much. I remember this walking behind the trench. Of course, the Turks didn't know, weren't firing at us particularly, because there was the whole front of the that could have been firing a mile away or something like that, but they didn't do any firing in front of us, because, of course, one must remember trench warfare had not started at this point.
How deep was this trench then?
Oh, it's about 4 feet deep.
And was it properly established at all? Did it have
No,
traverses?
It wasn't properly established. It looked like a dug line 4 feet deep in the ground, probably about 4 feet wide. You could be undercover if you lay down. You wouldn't be undercover if you stood up.
What were your other duties as brigade liaison officer besides this inspection?
I think our duties were to take messages from brigade to headquarters. As far as I know, there were not any other duties. And as far as I can remember, I just had nothing to do but sit at brigade headquarters.
Well, what was the scene at brigade headquarters, was it?
I have no idea now. I couldn't possibly remember that.
When and why did you return to your battalion?
Well, as far as I can remember, after that night, I returned to the battalion. I don't know quite why it was. I can't remember quite why it was. But I thought I was still supposed to go back to brigade as a liaison officer when our company commander called a conference of his junior officers, and we were told that we had to go into the attack the following day to try to take the village of Krithia. And I said, well, I don't want to leave my platoon, which I've trained for 8 months. What about this business of my going to brigade headquarters liaison officer? And my company commander said, well, if I were you, I'd forget about it. So I did.
At this briefing, what were you told about the operation for the next day? At the briefing of your company commander?
We were told we would have to advance along the left of the peninsula, to advance by platoons in extended order. The order for the companies was D, C, B, A. My company I was in was A company, and I was number 3 platoon, so that meant I was the last platoon but one in the advance. And how the distance between Gully Ravine and the sea is some 300 yards, and I had to extend my platoon in 2 lines, and as I've already mentioned, it consisted of a platoon sergeant and 60 men. There were 30 men in each line at 10 paces interval, and that's how we started to advance. But the scrub was so thick that it was impossible to keep in touch with all the men, and one had to merely blow one's whistle and hope that everybody did what they're supposed to do when you blow the whistle, advance.
Could you describe this scrub that was facing you?
Well, it wasn't exactly trees. It was like big hedges, big bushes.
Were they in line?
Small bushes and big bushes and grass in between. And very difficult over 300 yards. You couldn't see all the people in the platoon. But you had to follow. You see the people in front of you. When you found the line in front of you lay down, you lay down too. When they got up, you got up and continued to advance that way until eventually came to a trench, which when you got into it, you had to judge your own time as to when you advanced again. And not only that, it wasn't just our battalion. We got mixed up with the rest of the brigade who were already in these trenches, The 6th was attacked the day before. The 7th and the 8th Lancashire Fusiliers, well, I don't know what orders they'd received, but they were there. And so these trenches are fairly crowded.
When you heard about the operation that was coming up, this advance, did you make any special did you do anything special, like write a letter home or anything like that?
Not as I remember, no.
Did you feel nervous?
Oh, yes, of course I felt nervous. I think everybody, I don't think there's more than about one person in 500 doesn't feel nervous.
Well, and what was the motivation that made you...
Well, I mean, everybody's doing it. You've got to do like the others do. You've no way out of it at all. So, I mean, you don't think about such a thing. You just feel nervous and go on, hoping for the best.
Could you take me through this operation as you saw it?
Yes, well, this was the 7th of May, 1915. I moved on where I'd been the night before, near Pink Farm, in the order I've already given, D Company leading, followed by C, B and A. We moved there across a small stretch of open land, down a sort of path called Artillery Road, which led down to Gully Ravine. Now, Gully Ravine is not a small gully, it's a very big gully. The sides are very high. And we have trees and all sorts of things growing on the sides of the gully. This artillery road leads you to the bottom of the gully. We then crossed over, gully being very nearly dry as the winter water had gone. We crossed over and then wound our way up a narrow path up on the further side of the gully. And when we got to the top of this path, which, as I've already mentioned, is about 300 yards from the cliffs leading down to the sea, we found second in command of the company directing us to extend our platoons in two lines, a 10 paces interval, turn right, and keep going. Which is, of course, what I did. And so we started. And because there were a few hisses of bullets occasionally, and as we further went on, these got more and more. And we came to a trench, which we got into, and then we got out of that trench and advanced still further, and the amount of rifle fire we were under seemed to get bigger still. And I began to lose control of my platoon because I simply couldn't see them in the scrub. All I could do was to blow my whistle and we would advance along with a line in front of them when they advanced, and I hoped that they were doing, the NCOs were doing their job and so on. And eventually we got into the one trench behind the front line trench, and next to me was an old soldier of my platoon called Collinson. And at this time he got so mixed up with the other battalions that I just didn't know, and I just had to give the order, number 3 platoon will advance. And I got out of the trench, Collinson got out of the trench, and we had to go at the double because the firing was very heavy then. The bullets were hissing around like twist, 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 like that. And we ran about halfway to the trench and there was a mound. We got behind this, and then after a minute or so's rest, I said to Collinson, look, we've got to go on. And so we set off again. And I wasn't too bad a runner. I outstripped Collinson and eventually leapt into the front line trench, and I'm sorry to tell you that Collinson in the last 10 yards got hit through either the chest or the stomach, I can't remember which, and we got him in, but he died later. And then the second in command of the company was shouting, all people from the fifth language of Fusiliers come to the left. And he was somewhere about, only about 20 yards from the edge of the cliff leading down to the sea. So I made my way, not knowing where a lot of my platoon were by this time, but realizing the attack had to go forward. I made my way to the left of the trench amongst other people that were in it, and eventually found Captain Mills, who was the second in command of the company, and the order was given to advance. We got out of the top of this trench. This is the front line trench. Our fellows were firing from the parapet of this trench to presumably the Turks, who I hadn't seen. I couldn't tell where they were. They seemed to be hidden by bush and things like that. But the firing was very heavy, and the Turkish bullets were hitting our trench just like, you might imagine, going on to rifle range. And we didn't get more than about 10 or 15 yards before it was quite obvious that if we didn't lie down, we were just going to be hit. So we lay down, and you could see the bullets were cutting the grass in places. And I said to Captain Milnes, I said, Sid, do you think we should stop here? What about going down to the cliff? It's only about 20 yards away. He said, yes, I think perhaps we'd better. There's no good stopping here. We can't go on against this fire. So he said, you go first. So I got up and I ran to the cliff edge. A fellow called a friend of mine, the battalion and the company, Hudson, followed me. He was hit in the neck on his way. And what happened to the others, I don't really know. But then we got under cover of the cliff, and we got Hudson down to the shore, and a naval cutter or something came and gave us some water, which I remember had a little gin in it, a little rum in it, which tasted very nice. They took Hudson off, and we just waited for orders, because what we had to do then, it didn't concern me. As a second lieutenant, I had to wait to see what the company commander told us to do. And I ended the day more or less under cover of these cliffs.
How many of your platoon were you in touch with by the end?
Well, when you mean by the end, I think none. They'd stopped at various places on the way up, stopped in some of the trenches, some of them hadn't gone forward. And just honestly, I didn't know where any of them were. I mean, the battalion was eventually formed up in the dark to go back. Of course, they all began to appear. And I thought perhaps a lot of them got killed or hurt or injured. As it turned out in the end, I'd lost 3 killed and 3 wounded out of 60. Which, after all, is decimation, isn't it?
Literally.
Yes.
So, when you formed up, I believe you formed up in mass.
Yeah, very strange thing happened. The adjutant decided to form us up in mass, so he called out markers, and we all formed up in mass. And of course, if the Turks had realised what we were doing, had opened machine guns on it, there'd have been a lot of casualties.
Was this on the ground?
On the front line, yeah.
Above the trenches?
The front line on top, in the open, yeah. And then we marched back to the beach.
After the operation,
there's 100, I'd like to tell you this, the battalion lost 180 casualties altogether on that day.
After the operation, what was the morale like in your unit? Was it still high?
I think it was pretty high, yes, I don't think it was. Of course, after a battle like that, you see, when you get back, you're talking about what happened to so-and-so, and have you seen so-and-so, and we know who lost all will, and all that sort of thing.
And how did you feel? What did you think of your first taste of military life action?
Well, I thought that it would be a very good plan if the war to end there and then. Unfortunately, it went on another 4 years. I thought that war was worse than what I thought it was going to be, and I would have been very happy if it had ended.
Where were you posted to from the beach then? The next.
Well, then we went into a trench called it was behind. We had to dig this trench. It was behind a trench on Gallipoli, which is shown on the trench map as the second Australian line. We were some 200 yards behind the second Australian line, and we dug this trench, and it was a bit chalky soil. We called it the White Trench, and we stayed there till the next battle, which was on the 4th of June, or the Third Battle of Crythia, it was called.
Can I just examine this period in the trench? How exactly did you dig it? What sort of plan did you work to?
Well, it was all laid out, and of course there were still 800 people in the battalion, and they dug the trench down.
It wasn't difficult to dig the ground?
No.
How deep did you go?
Oh, I think 6 feet 6, something like that.
Did you build in a fire step and traverses? And
yes. You had to build in it. It wasn't just a straight line. You had to build it traverses because bullets were coming over at night. The Turks fired at night. There were quite a few spent type of bullets coming, you know, and you had to keep in the trench. You couldn't sleep out in the open. We weren't so far from the front line that you dare sleep out in the open or walk about in the open much.
And the work was mainly done at night?
No, the work wasn't done at night. The work was done in the daytime. The fatigues that we were on, as we weren't in the front, first two or three trenches, we were on fatigue all the time.
Oh, I meant the actual digging of the trench.
Oh, well, that was dug as soon as possible. When we got there, I don't think it took very long to get enough to get down, and it gradually improved as time went on.
You didn't have any barbed wire or anything like that, did you?
I don't think we had any barbed wire in front of that particular trench, no.
Where did you sleep in the trench?
Well, the officers were not, of course, in the front trench with the men. They either had, some of them went, I think, into a sort of temporary officers' mess. Others slept behind the line in little dugouts, which I did. I was in a separate dugout with a chap I knew quite well in my platoon, who was a corporal, full corporal. I slept behind with him. And our duties were that during the night we had to be on duty for 2 hours every night. And also, of course, everybody had to stand to at dawn for an hour. Sentries had to be posted to be relieved at certain intervals. It wasn't safe to be above ground at night because of the expended bullets that were coming over from time to time. So the men slept in the trenches. And the officers who was on duty had to go round and visit the sentries. And, of course, it was very difficult because you couldn't avoid treading on some of the men in the trench.